Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. I am Mo, and joined once again by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, enough talk about us. Who is our fantastic guest on this episode?
Well, our fantastic guest this episode is a fellow who actually just wrote a book about his experience in the band that he was there from the beginning, one of the co-founders of the Black Crowes. This is Steve Gorman, the drummer, and he is here to talk about that book and those experiences. Steve, how are you?
I am all right, gentlemen. How's everybody today?
Well, so far so good. So, I'll bet it's going to get even better as we start talking about your life.
We'll see what happens.
There could not be a more apt title than Hard to Handle for the book. And that just came together perfectly.
Yeah, it wasn't my idea originally. The guy at the publisher suggested it, and I said, no, that's too obvious. And then I wrote the book and went, that's actually pretty perfect.
Pretty much. So tell us about the writing of the book, the actual, was it Steve Hyman who co-wrote it with you?
The easiest way to describe it is to say that I wrote the book and he produced it, if that makes sense, like an album, if you will. We got together and mapped out what the narrative was going to be. I mean, I spoke for hours and hours and hours, several long weekends, and he recorded my telling of just stories in chronological order. Like we would start with, I moved to Atlanta and all these things happened. And then he got all those tapes transcribed. And then we went through that, my spoken word version of the story, if you will. And we just mapped out the points that we thought were the most important. You know, we kind of did the cliff notes first. So we framed out chapters, just a series of bullet points, like, okay, bus to Atlanta, first job, second job. You know, it was just like, it was like markers for me to write towards, to keep me on track. And turned out to be real. And we didn't know if that would work. We were just sort of experimenting to see how this was going to work. And so we agreed on what we thought the chapters would be and where they would go. And it made perfect sense to me. And then I went away and wrote it. You know, then it was like, okay, I'll let you know when I'm done, basically. And I would finish. So I wrote in order, like, chapter one, chapter two. And I had a little roadmap for each chapter to just, tell me, like, just you're going to start here and it's going to end here. And then in between, I'd come, there were more things I would remember or things I would realize are insignificant or whatever. I kind of edit as I write, So I turned in ultimately about 900 pages. Ooh. And then knowing full well that was way longer than anybody needed. And then Steven came back on the back end and then we started working on the edit together. And he had a good sense of which stories, there was a lot of thematic repetition, if you will. Like really funny stories or really crazy stories, but what they served in the general narrative had already been accomplished. So once I got a little distance from it and took a few months away and then saw the whole thing, I could see a narrative, I got that too. It's important that you don't slam the reader over the head with similar, the same thing over and over and over again. So, so really Steven's role was before and after, and then sitting down and putting it all on the page was me.
So then was that a lot different? I mean, you've not written a book before, so was that hard to kind of get into?
No, I think it would have been really hard if he hadn't suggested we plot it out ahead of time, because I like writing. I write all the time, different things. I mean, even if it's as simple as writing emails to friends, they can be really lengthy. I've just always written things my whole life. So to take, 6 months and just sit every day for hours and hours and write was actually, I enjoyed that process. But when I first was thinking about doing it, I recognized, having never written a book, like you said, I just needed some tip. I needed a couple little, hey, try this, go over there, write towards this. And laying the chapters out ahead of time, laying it out ahead of time, like it was like a map, that certainly was a big help to me.
So then I guess the other question is, what brought up the concept of doing the book in the first place? Was it the publisher going to you and saying, hey, let's do the Black Crowes now?
I had had people ask me over the years, you know, it had come up in the past. And I, you know, it was sort of like a joke or something in the band for years. People would say like, oh, Steve, you'll have to write the book one day, just because I have a linear memory. You know, I do remember a lot, you know, I wish I didn't remember all the stuff I did. So, it was, but you know, when the band ended in 2014, you know, basically Chris demanded all the money moving forward. He made this outrageous demand and that killed the band. And that was such a, it wasn't like heartbreaking because I wanted the band to be over too. Mm-hmm. It was disappointing because we had a farewell tour planned. And I think that that was a huge mistake. We should have done that as we had planned. And everybody could have walked away with a modicum of dignity and some respect for all we'd accomplished. But when that became impossible, I think if you had asked me in 2014, are you going to write a book now? I would have said, absolutely not. It was just such an embarrassing finish to something that had been really difficult just to get to that point anyway. And at a moment when it seemed like we were finally going to do something right and at least have a final chapter that made sense, you know, that got blown out of the water. So it took a few years before and I was very busy. You know, when that happened, my radio show had just gotten picked up nationally and I had another band that we were making our first album. And I had plenty of things that I was very focused on. So putting the Black Crowes in the rear view was actually pretty easy because it was like I was already preparing to do that. It just happened a year or 2 years earlier than I expected. But so it took a few years for it to sort of, it just all settled down, I guess. Like the story is, you know, I wrote that book with really full of gratitude and still with a lot of sadness because the story of the band is heartbreaking. It's a band that basically had a path. We set ourselves to succeed for as long as we wanted on our own terms and blew it. That's the story of the Black Crowes. And so there's always going to be sadness there, but you know, with some time and perspective, you know, it settled into place. And then really the Ed Harsh's passing in 2016, I think looking back now, it's pretty easy to see that was a real impetus because it was in the months following Ed's death that I really could recognize like, oh, I'm not angry or bitter or any of these things. I'm just like a little sad. After Ed's death, it was, you know, the Black Crowes were in my rear view. I never saw a future for myself with the band on any level, but there's obviously it's trite to say there's a finality with death, but really the essence of what made that band great, you know, Ed played a huge part in that. And it just in the months following his death, I felt the shift inside. I wasn't consciously looking for it, but I just felt like, okay, man, that was amazing. What an incredible story. You know, like I said, the anger over the ending and the any anger over things that was all just dissipated. It was truly, I looked back at it almost like it was something that happened to somebody else. Like I could really see a beginning, middle, and end, and that's how it sat with me. And I thought, well, this is okay. I can write from this perspective. I never wanted to write an angry book, and so it just. And I was talking with Stephen Hyden and he had mentioned it for years saying, hey, if you ever want to write this, man, you know, I'd help out if, you know, anything you need me to do. And so by the end of, I guess, 2017, I said, yeah, let me just see. I said, let me just start writing and see how I feel about it. And the more I wrote, you know, and it just took off from there.
Yeah. I would absolutely read the 900 page version myself, but, One of the things I actually really enjoyed about the book was that you didn't spend any of the time, you know, often we read these books and it's, hey, let me tell you about my parents and this is what it was like in fifth grade and here I was in mm-hmm. sixth grade. Here's my first love in the eighth grade. You got right to the story. You got right to the band, I mean, very quickly. And, you know, yeah, I think one of the things that really helps the book.
Well, I mean, I could write that. That's its own book to me. That's every bit as interesting as what followed. You know what I mean? Like everybody's. I think everybody's family life is pretty fascinating. You know, the more mundane it feels in the moment, the more you look back and realize, well, wow, that was pretty significant and vice, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So But no, I didn't. It didn't make any sense to me. I thought, you know, there are very few people in the world that want to read about my childhood, you know, and there are enough people that know about it, and they're all good with it. So yeah, I don't know that there was. I mean, the epilogue is where I talk a little bit about what it was like growing up in my family, and that's, you know, that explains a little bit more, probably gives a little light onto my approach to things and where I came from coming into the band. But, you know, I thought that was plenty.
Yeah. You know what? I think it helped the narrative. I mean, that is why people are picking up the book, right? Is to get to the band. And one of the things that's, when I was reading it, was really, really key to me was how quickly that relationship with Chris kind of turned somewhat dysfunctional.
Yeah, well, it was just—I mean, it's immediate, you know. You know, as much as we got along and had a lot of laughs and were constantly having a good time, the other side of that coin was there's a lot of bad times, and it established itself early, and it never really changed. And I, you know, to my own detriment, I spent years assuming it would for really no reason to think that was ever going to change. I wasn't given any hint or clues or signs that anything was going to change. I just expected it to, because I just always figured, well, we're all going to grow up soon. We'll all get our shit together. And it just never really happened.
So one of the things that I really appreciated was that you made a point of telling everybody that this was a story from your perspective, and that other people could have different recollections and stuff like that. Because I remember, you know, reading afterwards, you know, Rich saying about the Jimmy Page concept of writing new songs, and it's just like, well, that would be silly. Like, what? Like, I would never say something like that. And it's just like, okay, well, and so I guess I wonder, like, how do you feel about those moments when Rich comes out and says like, in response to your book in that regard?
I don't feel anything. I wouldn't expect him to, you know, own up to things like that. It's not surprising at all, you know. You know, it's not easy for. I said before the book was even released that the two of them were gonna. They're furious and can't believe anybody would have the audacity to prevent a narrative other than their own. You know, and I mean, you know, he's gonna. And I don't know what they're saying in general. I've heard a handful of comments, and it's the same old story, as opposed to just saying, well, this is what it is. I, you know, there's always a trying to frame a narrative to save face, or I don't even know how you would describe it other than there's just a lot of not wanting to face, you know, the truth about things. And there are things in the book that are true. It's my story. You know, that is my story. It's my perspective. It's what I saw and felt and heard and did. But within that, there are some undeniable facts. You know, it's these things are true. And I know for a fact there's nothing in my book that are multiple people that wouldn't support that story as being factual. So I didn't put a single thing in there that I didn't know for a fact that there were more than one or two, but multiple people would back my version of the events as I told them. So, you know, that was probably the only thing that really guided me when I was writing it, you know, because there were things that I wrote and then realized, well, that was just two of us in a room alone. And, you know, and I've never told this story before. And there were things like that where I thought, I'm not going to put that in there. Like anything that's in the book, other people have already known about and heard about and talked about, you know, the limited people that were there, you know, band and crew or whatever and management. So, you know, they're gonna deflect, and they should. There's really no, they don't gain anything by talking about it, and being dismissive of my contribution and other people's contributions. Only all that does is prove basically everything I said about them in the book, as far as their perspective and attitude. You know, mm-hmm. They are where they are right now because they're the kind of people who will dismiss someone else's 27 years. You know, that's unfortunate. And when I say things like that are sad, it's not sad for me. I'm fine. Yeah. You know, it's sad to think that that's where they are at this stage in their life.
Yeah. You know, I think your memory is obviously amazing. especially considering all the drinking in some of those chapters and, how well you recall things and recall conversations. But when you're putting the book together, there are certain stories which are key to the book, but you have to be careful because you want to respect somebody else's privacy. And you have to make that decision.
Yep. Very true. Well, there's not a lot of that, you know, any stories that are in there that are talking about anyone's personal life around or, you know, beyond the band. I mean, I tell a story of Chris and Kate's wedding, but that's just to illuminate other themes. You know, it's not about them as much as it's about Chris's, you know, his inability and the way that impacted the band. You know, nothing is a hit piece or a finger pointing. It's all, at least by design, the hope is that everything is just, you know, I'm trying to explain in those moments, you know, and I wrote it from my feelings at the time. It's not a doctorate. It's not a paper where I then summarize it. I do summarize it at the very end, but the chapters are written kind of where my head was as it was happening as much as possible. So it's, you know, to say there's artistic license or, you know, maybe, but really it's just, I did have thoughts and concerns about, you know, what should go in and what shouldn't, but it was really more about, does it serve the overall narrative? Not, will this upset somebody? I wasn't concerned about upsetting people at all. If you don't want someone to write something about you, if you don't like what someone writes about you, it's probably because you did something stupid or mean or horrible, you know?
Books like this often result in lawsuits you know, I mean, was there any concern of that?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit, but, you know, again, it's all true. And I don't know what, you know, I knew they had, before the book came out, they had put a deal together with Live Nation. They were going to reunite as the Black Crows, and I was aware of that. So I don't know what the lawsuit would be. I mean, if they say it hurt their feelings, I don't think anybody wants to go give a deposition where they have to be asked, well, but is it true? You know, that's just not a good place to be.
And certainly I have to say, I don't think the book is salacious reading it. You know, I think it does come across because there are points in the book where you allow yourself also to not necessarily be shown in the best of lights.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I do look at it as a, you know, we had this amazing situation, a very extraordinary turn of events, and we all did the best we could, and that wasn't near enough, you know, and you know, people can, you know, the easy thing for me to say, well, you know, I was a huge part of that dysfunction because I stayed, you know, if I had walked in 1994, the first time I ever truly said I'm out of here, you know, I would have saved myself an incredible amount of, you know, angst and a lot of, I would have saved a lot of energy that was going towards something that I could never fix anyway. So, you know, it's easy to say all that stuff now, but no, of course it's like we were all a part of it, the good and the bad. Yeah. I've never had a problem with, you know, to me, it's all everything that I try to do. It's all about the collective. It's all about the group. And a band is absolutely that. The band at its best, you know, you can say it's, you know, obviously the brothers wrote the songs, but that's not a construct that's like divinely handed down. You know, the band might have had great success if we had other songs written by other people. You know, Aerosmith hasn't really suffered having outside people write songs. And I'm not saying I wanted that. I was very happy with the music we made. But, you know, there's just certain, it's amazing how everybody does see things very differently. You could be in the same band and have an incredibly different set of values. And ultimately, I think that's truly where it all, that's the seeds were planted very early on for disarray because we had very different values. The things everybody wanted out of this couldn't have been more, I don't know that they could have been aligned any more poorly, truthfully.
One of the things that I noticed, of course, is that the last couple of albums, you know, Warpaint and such, don't get a lot of you know, talk in your book. Now, is that, yeah, was that part of the 900 pages or was that at that point, just like you were just there, it was business and you just recorded, because they're very much,
yeah, I mean,
like Chris Robinson. They're almost like Chris Robinson solo records to a certain degree.
Well, they're just, there was no feeling of, I mean, the difference between the mid-90s and then the 07, 08, 09 sessions and shows. I mean, it was two different experiences. And not just because everyone's 10 or 12 years older and hopefully a little wiser, but the essence is what I talked about before. There was an essence to the group from 91 to 97 that was gone and never to return. That whole period of time, I mean, again, that goes back to what I said earlier about the narrative has been established. At a certain point, there are plenty of stories I could have told about 2005 through 2010. I think it was just repetitive. You know, the names and dates have been changed, but the story is the same. So, it didn't. And I think that ultimately, you know, the Black Crowes at their greatest, that's a band from the 90s. You know what the band did? I said it was a group after 2006. Mm-hmm. And it had once been a band, and in 2005 and six, it was trying to be a band again, got there briefly. And then when it splintered in 2006, then it just turned into a full on all out war for control between the brothers. And so I thought that was enough to, you know, that's what it was. There's no need to, you know, to just flog that horse continually.
And if you were to say, then what would you like people to view your contributions, your legacy in the band to be?
Well, I mean, the music speaks for itself. I do think the Black Crowes are a band, and I'm the kind of drummer in that band, having really learned how to play with Rich and Chris, the three of us figuring out what we're doing together. It's an irreplaceable thing. If you're talking about what you can have good songs or great songs, but what the Black Crowes never leaned on that. We were all about being a band, a real living, breathing, six-headed organism, if you will. And, you know, what I contributed to that, the vibe, and, you know, beyond just my drumming was, I look at everything like it's a team. I'm a tremendous team participant. I want everything to be, I love having a common goal, and I like respecting everyone's contributions and people, you know, understanding that they're valued. And, you know, that was just not something that was talked about or expressed or acknowledged very much, but, you know, that's just what it was. But I do know that, you know, in any band situation, if in order for the people up front to be their best, in order for the band to be at its best, the band has to be confident. I mean, live music is 99% confidence and comfort on stage. And I provided that for everybody. You know, I think I'm the most consistent musician in the band by far. Like, my bad nights were few and far between, and they weren't the kind of bad nights where it dragged the band off the ditch into a ditch. Whereas, and I think that that's really it. It was just I think I was the most solid, you know, person in the band all those years, not the flashiest and maybe not the, you know, like in sports terms, it's one thing to be a great quarterback still needs an offensive line or he's literally going to be dead. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
People want to focus on the quarterback all the time, but somebody's got to block. Someone's got to give him time and room to be his best. And that's how I approached as a drummer. That was what I saw in that band with the music we were playing. That was my role. To just put everybody else in a position to be at their best.
And as big NFL fans, would love to get your opinion on the upcoming QB carousel, you know, free agency carousel, but that's not why we're here. We are here to talk about the book.
I'm happy not to talk about football for a while.
I'm sure you probably are. So, of course, you know, you have your band Trigger Hippie.
Yep.
So what is the future for Steve Gorman then within the music industry?
Well, Trigger Hippie's got shows this year. We're still adding more. You know, Trigger Hippie's not a full-time, it's every, you know, musically, that's my band. That's what I do musically. That's my full-time musical pursuit. We're not working full-time just because we're not at a place where we can do that yet, but that's the goal. We would like to build the band up to a place where we can go out and tour. And, you know, I'd love to play 60 to 80 shows every year. And, but you know, there's a big difference between that and 150 shows, which is, or 200 shows, which is what the Crowes did for years and years and years. I don't have any desire to go out and play, 200 shows in a year. I just don't think it, you know, it's Trigger Hippie plays, I'd like to play more than we're playing, but not a whole lot more, because every time we're on stage, we are very present. It's not, there's not a grind. It's not a, it's, you know, bands, the Black Crowes got addicted to touring early on. You know, we did 350 shows for Shake Your Moneymaker, flew home exhausted. Nobody wanted to be on the road anymore. We couldn't wait to get home. And within a week we were all losing our minds. You know, we were climbing the walls. Let's get the second record made. Let's get back on the road. Let's get back on the road. Let's get back on the road. And that was the state of the band for years. So I've done all that. I mean, and Trigger Hippie also, it's an entirely different vibe. It's incredibly, it's a place of respect and appreciation and acknowledgement. And it's a very positive place to be. And, you know, and it's not, I don't even have to say that's by design. It's the only way it would be, or else I wouldn't be there.
Now, would you go see one of the new Black Crowes shows?
No, I wouldn't. I have no interest in seeing that. I don't. It doesn't have anything to do with the Black Crowes to me. That mm-hmm. It's still the same name, and they're playing that music. But it's like saying, do you want to go? I don't know. Do you want to go on a date with your high school girlfriend? And it's like, not really. You know, and I don't want to go watch her on a date with someone else. It's
yeah. not, no, absolutely. I'm curious. I think it's 46. Go ahead.
It's, well, I was just going to say, you know, this, you know, I'm talking about the, you know, the band a lot in terms of the book I wrote, but like I said, the Black Crowes for me ended in 2014. And so, you know, that's 6 full years since the last tour ended. And I don't say this to, like I'm pounding my chest, but it's just a simple fact. This has been the best 6 years of my life. And in large part, because that energy and that experience isn't a part of my life anymore. And again, I kept myself there for all those years, and I did my best to grow and figure out who I was along the way. And I was absolutely ready for it to be over. So, like I said, I was disappointed that final tour didn't happen, because I thought we owed that to a lot of people, but and to ourselves. But moving on has been blissful, honestly.
And I think, go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, I think that's like the best part of the epilogue in that regard, is that you've been able to completely make peace with the band, because I think there are so many people that always have that constant concern of like, well, what if we come back and maybe we can be that much bigger and maybe we can actually do this time and maybe it'll work. And I know you went through that, but I think it's nice that you've kind of, you encapsulated going through that, and now you are truly at peace with yourself in that regard.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's really true. And I mean, I thought I was in 2001, you know, my time away from the band, when the band shut it down at the end of 2001. And then I actually quit. I didn't say, okay, let's do a hiatus. I said, no, I'm out. And I really did feel like I was out, and I really did want to be out. But then obviously when it did come back in 2005, again, I was like, man, I just can't stand the way it ended, and we blew it, and I wanted to take that other shot, and I'm glad I did, you know, because I didn't want to be sitting around wondering what if. You know, it's much better to regret something you did than something you didn't do, because at least you hopefully learned something. It's not confusing, or you're not wondering what if. But there's none of that now. I mean, like I said, when Chris demanded all the money in 2014, it was very easy to go, oh, okay, I'm never going to be in a room with that person again.
Oh.
Like, okay, great. There's no coming back from that to me. The absurdity of that situation was very, very final.
Okay. You know, I think looking at the clock, I think we've taken all the time we have with you. Cool. Please, the book obviously is available everywhere. Hard to Handle, Steve Gorman and Steve Guide, Stephen Heidman. I want to get his name right.
Heidman.
For some reason, I can't seem to get that right. Steve Heidman. So, all right. Obviously, it's available everywhere. Is there anything else you'd like to promote or let the listeners know about?
Well, Trigger Hippie, we don't have any Canadian dates scheduled, but we're trying to. You know, we'll get there eventually. The Trigger Hippie album came out in October, full circle and then some. And I'm very proud of it. I love the record and I love that band. And then I have a classic rock radio show that's in the States nationwide at night called Steve Gorman Rocks. So if anybody wants to check out either of those things, that'd be great.
Well, you absolutely are a busy guy, and we appreciate you taking the time out. I will say that the book is, I think the book is wonderfully written. Like, it's a really easy read, and there is a lot of other books that I've tried to read that are not as easy to read. So I definitely appreciated this. Hard to handle. I think it's awesome, and I think everybody who's interested in music, but certainly the Black Crow should read it.
And just as an add on to that, many times I read these biographies, these autobiographies like this, and I actually come away liking the person who wrote it less somehow than more, and that's certainly not the case with you. You really come across as a winning personality, both within the book and also within this podcast which is why we're so happy to have the opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah, well, thanks, fellas. I appreciate that very much.
Well, thank you, Steve Gorman. The book is Hard to Handle, and go check out Trigger Hippie.
Cheers, fellas. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, thank Steve. You. All right.
Don't have the